to the fifth case, Tsimikas versus Global Credit. Mr. Phillips.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. I'm David Phillips. I'm arguing for Ms. Tsimikas for reversal of the district court's grant of a 12B6 motion to dismiss in a Fair Debt Collection Practices Act matter. Heard a lot of argument this morning, so I'll try to be very brief. I think the party's briefs fairly set forth their position. I would ask this court to look at two things in considering whether to reverse the decision below. I'd ask you to actually take a look at the collection letter at issue here from Global and juxtapose it with the collection letter at issue in the Taylor versus Cavalry matter, which was one of the decisions principally relied upon by the district court judge. Taylor versus Cavalry was an appeal to this court. I think Judge Williams, you said on that panel, and if you actually look at the Taylor letter, the two are in no way similar other than having the same phrase, act now. If you want to actually see the original letter, which isn't set forth in total in the Taylor versus Cavalry opinion, it's available on PACER at Northern District of Illinois, case number 02786, or we could submit it as an addition if your court wants. It was Exhibit A to Docket Entry 1, which is Exhibit A to the complaint. You look at the two, they're striking. In Taylor case, there was talk about payment and act now and do this, and that court said those statements were mere puffery. That was the phrase Judge Posner used. Here, it's far more than mere puffery. There's talk of legal action, the word judgment's in there five times, consequences of judgment, and there's also a request for a payment in less than 30 days. They say, call now, or call our office today, give a phone number to make arrangements to resolve this matter if you cannot make the minimum payment, etc. And then a letter further, twice after that, asks for payment. Payment to Capital One, payment. And it has all these threats of judgment. And unlike the two district court decisions cited by the appellees, by the collection agency, where their letter won in Florida and Nebraska, we think their threats are legit. If you look at the municipal court records in Cook County, Capital One does in fact sue. It sues repeatedly. If you just looked at the lawsuits they filed in 2012, they've already sued 1,000 consumers, so these threats are legit. They would cause any consumer, let alone unsophisticated consumer, to think, I don't have time. I better do something right away. And if you look at the two collection letters, one of the things that the panel found dispositive in Taylor was that after the act now language, immediately after that was the validation notice, and that's that provision you see in collection letters. You've got 30 days to dispute the validity of the debt or any portion thereof, etc. In the collection letter by Global, the validation notice is on the back. After all the threats of judgment and pay off and do this and do that, after all the we're going to boil you in oil. The other important thing to look at is when you're looking at Taylor. I handled Taylor and I lost that one. And under this court's jurisprudence, I should have lost that one because we were going to stand on the letter itself. And we didn't offer any extrinsic evidence. We said, maybe we'll give an affidavit from the consumer, and that was rejected out of hand. That was while in the drumbeat of you got to have a survey in a closed case had just begun, and until it became a cacophony of you absolutely have to have a survey. In this case, We explicitly said to the district court judge, if you don't think it's a violation on the face, we'll do a survey. We absolutely want to do a survey. So, you know, that was at our Doc 21 in our response to the motion to dismiss. And we had 3 pages devoted to that. We'll do a survey if we have to.
You don't have a survey, though, do you?
No, this was just on a motion to dismiss. You wouldn't roll out a survey until you see if you have a case that's alive and a case that has a class, because they're too expensive. The surveys are $30,000 to $50,000, and as this court may well know, no one has successfully done a survey. I'm the last consumer attorney who tried to do a survey. This will be probably number 4. My partner hasn't stopped me yet.
And you're suggesting that we direct the trial court to appoint a neutral expert to conduct a survey.
Well, that's something we're going to ask the court to do. The court doesn't have to do that. That's been a strong suggestion in the every case, that maybe because of the expense that a neutral expert be appointed, but the court could still decline to do that. But the first thing we would do is we'd see if there's going to be a class here, because the only way to afford a survey is there a viable class. And then we'd probably move to appoint a neutral to do a survey on the letter.
So I know you say this letter. I want to get back to this language in the letter that kind of makes people feel like they'll be boiled in oil. But about the 5th or 6th paragraph says, it's not too late to fix this situation. We urge you to act now. And then at the bottom it says, see reverse side for important information in all caps. So you think that's of no consequence?
No. I think that it distinguishes it from the actual letter in Taylor, where the validation was immediately after the word act now and is different, because in Taylor there was no we're going to boil you in oil. If you look at the actual letter in Taylor, they're not boiling anybody in oil. They want to get paid. They make reference to payment, but they don't threaten judgments and lawsuits and credit reporting. And if you just look at it, you'd have to be a fool not to think you have some problems here from this letter. In fact, that's the second thing I'd ask this court to do. Compare this letter from Global with the letter that was found to violate the act in Chauncey. You were on that panel, Judge Flom. In Chauncey, all that letter said was, we want to be paid within 30 days. Here, I'll quote it from the language Chauncey, which was a Chauncey versus JDR 1997 decision. The language from that letter said, unless we receive a check or money order for the balance in full within 30 days from receipt of this letter, a decision to pursue other avenues to collect the amount due will be made. Other avenues. It's not judgments 5 times. It's not lawsuit. It's not credit. I mean,
about this letter in Global, it actually tells people exactly what the consequences are, because it says if we can't get this matter resolved soon, and your account charge is off, capital may be forced to take legal action. It explains that it could result in a judgment against them.
Absolutely.
And if there is a judgment, they could take whatever action they deem advisable to enforce it. So.
Absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with saying truthful things about what may happen,
right,
except when those truthful things cause a consumer to scratch their head of, do I still have the 30 days to dispute the validity of the debt? This court in Bartlett versus Heibel went so far as to write a collection letter if you want to say the bad things that might happen, like a lawsuit or a judgment, where you demand payment in less than the 30-day period.
And then it later says, call our office today, and it gives a number to make arrangements to resolve it. If you can't make your minimum payment, we can go over options available to you.
That's
and
correct.
And then it has that, you know, read the important language.
That's correct. But it doesn't have the transitional phrase of explaining how those two things fit together. The I'm about to be boiled in oil versus I've got the 30 days. That was the important thing that was found in Bartlett versus Heibel, which is there needs to be some explanation as to how these two statements fit together. And there's no explanation as to how these fit together. And if you actually look at the Global letter, you know, it has the 30 days off right on the back, along with all kinds of other notices.
But the first thing that's there is it says, unless you notify this office within 30 days after getting this off notice that you dispute the validity or any portion, this office will assume this debt is valid. if you notify us, blah, 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 that there's a dispute, you can get verification, and it gives them all the steps they need to do to protest it.
Right, but you're taking the argument that's been rejected by this court and every other court, which is that somehow mere inclusion of the 30-day notice is curative, and it's not. Otherwise, you wouldn't have the validation provision. It'd be like a cop beating a suspect over the head. Maybe they have the right to beat him over the head, and then going, oh, by the way, you have the right to remain silent. Okay? Well, you just beat me over the head. And that's what this letter would do to an unsophisticated consumer. Beat them over the head. Judgment, 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 lawsuits, all of which may be true. We didn't dispute it. In fact, consumer would be foolish not to act in less than 30 days here. But they should have been told, at a minimum, despite what we've said we'll do here, if you request validation, we'll stop. That's what they did in the Bartlett versus Heibel letter. And they did that without even a survey. That's one thing a lot of consumer lawyers have criticized this court for, which is, you know, if we have to do a survey, you shouldn't write collection letters without a survey, but that's the lay of the land. So I'd ask you to do those two things. Look at the actual letter in Taylor. It's clearly distinguishable. And also remember that in Taylor, they refused to produce any extrinsic evidence. They disavowed it.
If the 30-day language, which starts the second page, were placed on the first page, does that cure anything?
I don't think it cures it, Judge, but it makes it a closer case. Okay? You still need some sort of explanation as to how the two were going to boil you in oil versus I've got 30 days to stop things. You have to have some explanation how the two fit together. That's been since 1988. That's when the overshadowing doctrine first came into place in Swanson versus Oregon. It's been 24 years in place. This court's, you know, in its trilogy of cases, if you want to use a phrase from one of the earlier cases, Bartlett, Chauncey, and Avila, made clear you have to explain how the rights fit together. And then even more importantly, Congress in 2006 said, absolutely, that's correct. They codified your overshadowing doctrine. They added it to Section 1692 GB and said you can't do anything within the 30-day period that would overshadow or make it inconsistent. I see that my time's up. Questions? Thank you, judges.
Mr. Kaminsky?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. Global's letter falls directly within the purview of the Taylor versus Calvary case. It completely resolves this decision. The language in Global's letter, act now, call today, again, it's directly on point with Taylor versus Calvary, which says that type of language is merely informational, it's merely puffery language, and that language, according to the court, would be obvious to the most unsophisticated debtor that the collector would very much just like the debtor to pay. The court also said that such language would not even mislead even the most unsophisticated debtor because the letter and the language therein rather creates a mood rather than concrete misinformation. The letter also, in Global's letter, also informs the debtor generically about what the creditor may do, not what Global would do. And it is dependent on future actions, future decisions. There are no hard and fast deadlines that contradict or overshadow the 30-day validation letter. Even if the letter discussed what Global would do as opposed to what the creditor, Capital One, would do, there would still be no overshadowing as a matter of law. This is in contrast to the various decisions that Appellant's counsel just cited, Avila versus Rubin, Bartlett versus Heibel, and Chauncey versus JDR Recovery. In the Avila versus Rubin case, the court said, we shall expect payment or an arrangement made within 10 days. That 10 days directly conflicts with a 30-day validation notice in 1692G. Bartlett versus Heibel, if you wish to resolve this matter, you must do one of two things within 1 week of the date of this letter, or you will be sued. That's Bartlett versus Heibel. Again, language that directly conflicts with a 30-day validation notice. Chauncey versus JDR Recovery. In that case, the letter said, unless we receive a check or money order in full within 30 days, A decision to pursue other avenues will be made. Again, the phrase within 30 days conflicted with the validation notice because the debtor has the right to dispute the debt within 30 days. None of those hard and fast deadlines that are in those cases are even close in the global letter.
Now,
there's
let me
no
ask you this, just getting back to the validation. You know, why wouldn't it have been better to have the validation on the front along with the rest of the information?
There is no need to have the validation on the front with the rest of the letter. There is technically not enough room, and there's case law that holds that the validation on the back of the notice does not violate the or overshadow the 1692G notice as a matter of law. There was no need here. Also, all of the language that Global used basically has to be read as a whole. You don't parse out one part or another, and reading it as a whole, the debt collector would see that they have the absolute right to contest this debt or dispute it within 30 days. There is language right on the front of the letter in big, bold font that states, please read the other side for important notice. So that immediately tells the debtor to turn the page, and the very first paragraph when they turn that page is the validation notice.
So you're saying there's no way that that paragraph, the validation, at least couldn't have started on the first page? There's no way to, like, work that letter so it could have done that? I understand your position is it wasn't necessary, but are you saying that's not possible?
Well, not in this circumstance, Your Honor. The letter would have been crammed too much, and it wouldn't have given the opportunity to put that large font language that is on the letter, which says that read the other side for important information.
Would the validation have to have been in a smaller font if it were moved to the front side of that letter? Or could it have been done in the same font that you used?
It could have been, but it doesn't have to be. What's very important here is that this letter is basically in line with this Seventh Circuit's decision in the Durkin decision, and that court basically said if you have a collection letter and that collection letter carefully apprises the debtor of all of its rights and tells the debtor what are the negative consequences that could occur in the event that the debtor doesn't subscribe to or comply with the letter, that's exactly what Durkin said to do. That's exactly what Global did in its collection letter. It told the debtor of the potential consequences that could occur if the debtor did not comply with the letter. And Durkin also said that the purpose of this is to promote the resolution of the debt before litigation. That is exactly what that letter did. Also, I bring to this court's attention the Gacy versus Welburn case out of this circuit, where the Seventh Circuit said where judicial precedent has already been established that certain language doesn't overshadow the 1692G language as a matter of law, extrinsic evidence should not be allowed because it's a waste of judicial resources, and the district court basically should apply existing precedent or explain why it's making a departure therefrom. That is exactly what the district court did here by following the Taylor decision. Again, what's good about this Global letter is that there is no immediate consequences or threats for failing to act now. There's no immediate consequences for failing to, quote, call our office today. All of the language regarding what the creditor may do is exactly that. It is what they may do in the future, and there's a plethora of precedent suggesting that there is no violation for use of such language, and the appellant doesn't cite to any. Global's letter and its language basically here complements the 30-day validation notice because it also helps the debtor to do what he has to do to avoid the consequences of a potential lawsuit, which the Seventh Circuit says is what we want to do. We want to get the debtor to resolve this case so that the debtor can avoid a potential suit. It's a win-win situation for both sides.
Mr. Bransky, when it says see reverse side for important information, what's the important information?
The important information is the 30-day validation notice, which comes directly thereafter.
All right, so there's plenty of room to just say, see reverse side if you dispute the validity of this debt. I mean, we could do it in one line there. I mean, I appreciate you referencing our precedent and the rest, but as far as spacing, I appreciate what you need to have on your front page, but I don't know that all the 30-day language has to be on the back. Important information is alerts one, but it doesn't speak specifically to the 30-day validation.
Well, that language and the manner in which Global has done it has been pretty much acknowledged by every single court throughout the United States as language that comports with that 1692 validation notice and the way it needs to appear and be set out in a collection letter.
And so, we get that, but what we're saying is, so it would be crystal clear, since there's room on the bottom of the letter, that could be put there. That's the point. I think that's the point in the questions I was asking, and my brother Joel Flom is asking, that would make it crystal clear. So, he would still bring a lawsuit and still say this is not sufficient because he thinks the language is threatening and it's not appropriate because it's threatening people to boil them in oil, although I don't see those words anywhere there, and that's his characterization. But the point is that could be at the bottom. That line could be there. That would give you a little more strength, because I'm sure there's not going to be the last lawsuit that's filed like this.
I understand that, Your Honor.
But that's the point. That's the point.
Your Honor, very briefly, counsel mentioned the Bartlett decision and the Bartlett safe harbor. Bartlett is basically, and applicable here, completely factually different. Bartlett letter said, you must do one of two things within 1 week or suit will be commenced. No language like that is in the Global letter. And this court has cautioned before that use of the Bartlett safe harbor language in some circumstances would violate the FDCPA if it were used. There's no need to go to the Bartlett safe harbor language, and you only resort to there if where there is you have a violation on the face of the letter. There is no violation here as a matter of law. And again, use of the Bartlett safe harbor letter would possibly cause Global to make a misrepresentation as a matter of law if they stated what the creditor would do in 30 days, because there's no indication that the creditor would sue in 30 days, and that cannot be gleaned in any matter from the letter. Very quickly on this issue about survey evidence, I appreciated counsel stating that no one has done the survey evidence, and it never works, and it's never worked in any case thus far. And the decision in Ruth versus Triumph from this circuit again says where the letter basically falls into category one and basically is a letter that on its face does not violate the law as a matter of law, should be no resort to survey evidence. This is also consistent with the McMillan decision, which says undoubtedly there will be occasions where we are required to hold that no reasonable person, however unsophisticated, could construe the wording of a communication in a manner that violates the statutory provision, and there's no need to resort to survey evidence. And resorting to survey evidence also conflicts with the Durkin case. And also, what counsel seems to be advocating is that in any 12B6 case, you can resort to survey evidence. And I think that's a very dangerous proposition, because if that is not the law, first of all, of this circuit, that means, according to counsel, that you could never have a 12B6 motion, because the minute plaintiff cries for survey evidence, the 12B6 fails. That would result basically in extortion and litigation, and clearly an unintended result by the Seventh Circuit with respect to its previous pronouncements on survey evidence. Thank you, Your Honor. I believe that I'm out of time, and we urge the court to affirm the district court's decision. Thank you very much.
We've run out of time. Barb, you may have a minute, Mr. Phillips.
Just to correct one issue, you've hashed about where it should be and what it should be. You can overshadow the validation notice by a contradiction and also by a threatening contradiction. Okay, I say this does both. There's threats, they're probably true threats, and there's a contradiction. It does ask for payment.
Well, if there are consequences, they might not be threats.
Well, the true consequences, sure. We don't say they can't say the true consequences. They can. But they have to explain how does that fit with the 30-day thing. Counsel repeatedly referred to Durkin versus Equifax. Durkin versus Equifax is another one of my cases. We didn't offer a survey there. Okay, so to say that that's dispositive is just not correct. Durkin versus Equifax, the district court judge did find the case potentially confusing, but said you needed a survey. There was none offered. The case lost on that ground. And I do not say that there aren't cases where you can't have a survey. If we just filed a lawsuit and said, here's a letter, or there was some collection activity, and it overshadowed. Okay, and there's nothing in the letter. It maybe just has the 1692G notice. Of course that case can be dismissed, and I don't get to just say, give me a survey. And if this letter was just like Taylor, and it said, act now, because of the precedent, I'd lose. I don't get to say, give me a survey, although I think I could have maybe saved that case with a survey. But here, it's far more than that. And we'd ask that we be allowed to conduct a survey at the very least. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thanks to all counsel. And the case is taken under advisement.